Hello and a happy new year to you. Welcome to this week's episode of the PPC Chat Roundup, which is the first episode of 2024. In today's episode, we have the awesome Julie coming back with us talking about what's on our mind for PPC this week. So what are we chatting about? What are we thinking about? What are we working on? What are our plans for this year? We're talking about all the different ways that we're hoping to get our performances back on track post-Christmas and to ensure that we're ready for any Google updates this week. We talked about different things around performance max, third-party cookie thoughts, Google Ads, support that we might need from Google Ads and other platforms, clients and stakeholders, what they're thinking of as well. So yeah, I hope you are ready to listen to all our thoughts. I hope it matches some of your thoughts. If it doesn't, please join the PPC Chat Slack group. Give us your thoughts about what's happening and what's on your mind this week. And so that we can really help you to ensure that you're the best PPCer you can be this year. All right, let's go. Hello and a warm welcome to this week's episode of the PPC Chat Roundup, a podcast where I round up the Slack discussion that happens on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. GMT. So I'm your host, Anu, recording from my studio here in London, UK, and I use this platform to share not just expert, but also my ideas and considered best practices about paid media and the direction the digital industry is going in. So if you want to keep up to date with my tips and tricks in the industry and get the latest on the podcast that has been called your go-to, if you don't make it to the PPC Chat live discussions, and even if you do, then like, follow, comment on my posts on LinkedIn, because I'm on there every day of the week sharing polls, sharing discussion points, giving learning tips of my journey with PPC Live UK, my event company, and also just tips on doing paid search with integrity. But you can also search The Marketing Anu, which is what I sign off all my posts with. So you'll be able to find me there using that search. There's also our LinkedIn group. You can join us on PPC Chat Roundup. But if you're also on Instagram, why don't you check us out at PPC Chat_Roundup to get quotes and snippets from previous episodes. So yeah, this week we'll be talking about what's on our mind and what we're thinking about for this week, this year. Yeah, before we get into our questions though, just wanted to remind us that this chat is intended for PPC professionals of all levels, and if you have something you want to share, please do. We are a friendly and supportive community, so don't be afraid to participate, even if it's during the chat or after the chat. Just go into the Slack group, which is the PPC Chat Slack group, and join us on there. But yeah, if you don't want to go through the whole reading through what people's past answers are, you just like to listen to me give you the run through, the roundup of what our experts shared this week, then thank you for joining me on this episode, and I hope you enjoy. So yeah, Julie takes us on to the question of the day, the question of the title: what's on our mind this week in PPC? So let's get straight into answers for that question. So Peter Bowen goes, I've been mulling on the future of targeting in a post third-party cookie world. And yeah, Julie goes, I'm working on lining up a guest on the end of the cookie topic, but yes, on my mind too. So yes, there was an update last week that Google has updated the Chrome in terms of how it tracks and doesn't allow you to track by cookies anymore. So that is going to be very prevalent. It's going to be a prevalent topic this year, and it's actually going to be one of the topics that is going to be covered by one of our speakers at the PPC Live event on the 1st of February. Julia Weiss as well said, is PMax just going to take over everything, and when are keywords ending, right? Amit Cabra, what's on her mind? Third-party cookies. Slobodan Jelisavak responds saying, discovery is going away this month and soon display will follow their step. We are heading in that direction, it seems. And that's in response to Julia Weiss about PMax. Alex Nicole goes, so fun fact, I haven't done much with PMax. Just with my clients and how budgets have landed, I haven't had much need since I've been able to use budget and get wins with search. So I've been contemplating structure for PMax because I think it's time to test it more. I'm wondering what other people do for PMax structure. I figure the answer will depend on the scenario, but I wanna hear what people do. And Sarah Steeman, what's on her mind? Google support, not happy. River Minkoff, demand gen is not working as well as discovery was. What gives? Ooh. So demand gen was like a new update that came about like near the end of last year that was supposed to be the newer discovery type campaign that should work the best for lead gen campaigns. So wonder what's going on there. Julie Bicini goes, yeah, I just made an end of cookies thread we can use for that topic. Adebowale's response saying, I'm not sure how well PMax would be for B2B campaigns. And he goes, hi, everyone. Slobodan as well says, yeah, goes, I'm trying to prepare my content game for myself to acquire new clients in new year as a freelancer micro agency owner. This topic is always interesting to discuss with fellow PPCers. That is true. And especially, I was thinking I'm going to write a post about how I really see a lot of what I usually, all the people that I usually see posting on Twitter now posting a lot more on LinkedIn. I'm really seeing them and I'm really hoping they stick through, they really find their niche, they find their groove of getting those posts, writing those posts that people will be attracted to. I love it for them. Julie as well said, yeah, made a thread from PMax discussion. And she continues to Slobodan say, next week's topic is freelancing and consulting. So mark your calendar for that. So yeah, next week we're going to be talking about freelancing and consulting. So if you fit that bracket, make sure you join us next week. Alex Nichols, yes, says thanks to Julie. Travis goes to Slobodan, says, I'm similarly working on content to kick off the new year directionally. I'm unpacking one specific strategy at a time and writing against a decision tree of sorts. If this is happening, I look to A and do B or C. If that is happening, I look to X and do Y or Z. And yeah, Slobodan goes to, yeah, does a praising of the hands, raising the hands in the air emoji there, says, I think content is the king. Sharing advices, tips, suggestions on some professional platforms like LinkedIn and maybe YouTube will be ultimately lead driver machine. Knowing actually what worked is a bit hard, as too many touch points are happened between reading some of your posts to users actually DMing you. Lindsay as well says that same as many, I think third-party cookies tracking, getting buy-in for server-side tracking, how to be accountable for results when targets are higher but quantifying results is harder. Dwayne Brown goes that it is 2024 and another year around the sun. Also thinking about 2024 revenue goals for clients. Yes, thinking about 2024 revenue goals for PPC Live as well and hoping they look better than what February might look like. Brian Gasper as well says, my concern at the moment is getting conversion tracking working with the client switching over to Shopify CRM. Julia Weiss goes, I know this is mostly about performance media itself, but I'm also thinking about my team this year. What do we want to get out of 2024? What do we want to put in? How are we doing? And what can we do better? Absolutely. And so we then go on to the next question. Julie asks, starting and end of third-party cookies thoughts thread here. So what are we thinking about the end of third-party cookies thoughts? So what are our thoughts on that even about the end of the third-party cookies? And Peter goes, yeah, trying to find the signal amongst the noise. I've read a bunch of doom and gloom, but can't quite figure out what the real impact is likely to be. And I think it's the impact is going to be a wait and see. It's going to be, it depends. It's going to be you know, one way for what kind of industry, one way for another kind of industry, one way depending on how much data client has been collecting, of how much first party data they've been collecting from their customers. So yeah, it's really going to be a very much, it depends in terms of the actual impact. Sophia responds saying, I honestly can't understand what would be the biggest issues. My assumption that we won't have proper in-marketing audience targeting or custom audiences. Yeah, the retargeting might be an issue. And Julie goes, yeah, it is confusing, in response to Peter going, there were some questions about it when we had Ginny here, and I just pinged her about getting our recap post out. But I think many things are going to break when cookies are finally pulled from Chrome. Sam Tomlinson goes, yeah, my wildly unpopular take on this is that Google has reached the Big Short place. They have secured a sufficient data moat such that doing this will not break any of their ad platforms. Adebowale responds saying, for this issue, I can only say we just have to keep building and optimizing our email list. Yeah, the first party data is all about building and knowing your customers in this way and very properly. And we have Julie going, yeah, well, and let us not forget how many sites rely on cookies to function right now. That is going to be a big old mess in this too. So yeah, I still get very much prevalent on a regular basis when I go to a site. It's all about, yeah, the first, always the that pop-up of allow cookies or reject all the cookies. So yeah, I guess there will be no pop-ups anymore, and there'll just be no cookies anymore too. That is following us around on the site. And yeah, we've got Julie as well responding to Sam saying, Google is going to be pushing model data hard as this happens. I know you're experienced with modeling. Advice for those who have not waded into those waters much or at all. I have not waded into those waters at all. Sam goes, I actually think this will be less impactful than iOS for Google advertisers. iOS was particularly problematic for Meta because of Meta's limits on end-to-end collection. Meta doesn't have Android, and they don't have Chrome, and they don't have YouTube. Oh, interesting. Google has 60% of the browser market, 90% of the search market, and 80% of the smartphone market. So maybe you can use those percentages for your data. Dwayne Brown goes, yeah, good kick in the bum to get server-side tracking up, but also first-party cookies will still be here. It is not Armageddon. It is not Armageddon. Some are posting on LinkedIn about. So it's not Armageddon? Or it's not Armageddon? I think he meant it's not Armageddon, like people are posting about on LinkedIn. Sam goes, Google rolling this out tells you that Google's team, who I firmly believe is one of the smartest and best in the world, has secured a viable workaround, and they are confident that doing this will only strengthen their competitive position. Amit goes, I'm with Sam on this one. I remember a few years ago when the conversation started, I had said something similar about how there is no way that Google wouldn't find a workaround before they start removing third-party cookies. I'm not as shaken by this news as I was for the iOS update. Travis Bearshall responds saying, it reminds me of the transition from JS to HTML5 requirements for display ads about 8 years ago. This felt tectonic, but advertisers paved a new path. I don't even remember that issue happening anymore because the moment it probably seemed life-changing, but now can't even remember what life was before how we're doing things right now. So this is certainly bigger than that, but it's also still just a constraint. Travis continues, the sandbox is a different shape, but there's still sand, borders, and toys to play with. We'll persevere. Amit goes, I cannot fully believe that they would push the removal so many times for this long without having done everything they could to find a workaround. And Sam goes, yeah, the really amusing part is that people believe in that ending third-party cookies will somehow hurt dominant players. Yeah, regulation hurts upstarts and challengers, not the titans like Google and Meta. So Google has a data moat, Meta has a data moat, Apple has a data moat. This change now acts as a constraint on future brands building similar moats while leaving those established provided minimally impacted. And Julie as well goes, yeah, let's not ignore the role that Google wants advertisers' customers' lists to play in this too. In addition to providing even more data to the Google machine, it also shifts liability off of Google and onto advertisers. And Julie concludes with that saying, make sure you have your privacy policy ducks in a row when it comes to how you might use customer and or prospect data. I know I am a broken record on this, but it is important. So make sure you know what the regulations are, what your position needs to be, what your responsibility needs to be, so that you don't get, bogged down with some, messing up with laws and legal issues when it comes to you needing to do that. And then we have Francisco Banuelos, that's a new name in this group here, going, what advertising networks are more likely to suffer from the end of third-party cookies? Sophia goes, yeah, I've seen a few posts on LinkedIn about this topic, and they pretty much said that this change will determine who are the great advertisers that will action things in advance compared to just good advertisers. Sam Tomlinson goes, I think that's pretty staggering exaggeration. And Sophia goes, I'm very glad to hear that, and I agree with your perspective on this. Amit Cabra goes, yeah, it's just been a lot of people being a little dramatic about it. I've seen some people use the news to increase the email subscriptions, so I can't hate on the hustle, but it feels icky. Greg Asquith goes, responds saying that I always call back to the days in Holdco land I spent making real-time dashboards, prepping for the days GDPR and Safari's first tracking removal initially hit Europe, only for them to look pretty much totally normal. I think in general, the big players who have either one, a whole ton of logged in user data, or two, a browser where it's looking like a lot of attribution will happen, will be at least short term in the strongest position. But I'm incredibly excited to see and get involved in the innovation that it will force to happen. We won't see where the chips finally fall for a while until the next big thing comes along. Absolutely, I think that's true. I don't think we'll see any immediate change, but after a while, we'll really start seeing the effect of this change right now. And so now we're moving on to talking about Performance Max, and Julie opens a thread to talk about Performance Max strategies and will it be the one campaign to rule them all? And so we've got Adebolo Wale saying, so as with regards to PMax ads, I see it doing so well for e-com, but I do not see how it applies to B2B businesses. Slobodan goes, I think it's like going towards that, but I don't believe it. Every business is too complicated and unique in its own way that it is not possible to create a platform or tool that would only work in the insert budget and start the party way, right? Julia Vice goes, agree. If there aren't enough conversions to provide data, I don't see it going great, and a max clicks bid strategy would be acceptable for me. Julia Vice goes, I just reminded my client that if you don't provide a video, Google will make one automatically based on what it finds from your sites and asset library, and yikes on that one. Definitely don't want your Google to be doing that. Alex Nicole goes, I've heard that almost everyone I've talked to said providing your own video creative is a good thing. Thankfully, I have the ability to do that with clients I'm looking to test PMax for this year. Julie Bacini goes, I firmly believe that Google Ads wants to make PMax the only campaign option. No, not whether they can actually do that is another question, but as we know, what they do depends heavily on what their most favored advertisers want, not necessarily the needs or wants of many advertisers. So this one will be interesting to watch. All of their automated bidding options have a long way to go, function efficiently or well for low volume or low conversion window accounts. Riva Minkoff goes, yeah, I hear from Google that it's heading towards a one campaign to rule them all approach with PMax, but I agree with everyone that it doesn't seem to work for a lot of advertisers or situations. And Travis Bierschel as well says that here are some broader setup requirements I try to adhere to. Bid on new customers only, a setting. Set new customer value to 1 cent lowest possible to avoid Google artificially inflating revenue figures within the reporting UI. Create and add a brand exclusion list to avoid PMax cannibalizing branded search up to 50 or 60% left unchecked. Run a parallel branded search campaign, either bidding strictly with TCPA or utilizing target impression share, high 90% plus low CPCs to play adequate defenses versus Amazon and other competitors. Fully build out asset groups. Connect ESP and pull in win back audiences for the use in asset groups. Leverage top converting queries as a separate asset group audience. Lot of advice and a lot of amazing strategy points given there by Travis. And Julia Weiss as well gives her own tips, saying, yeah, always look at what Google does with e-commerce shopping. That's usually where we'll end up a year later. She continues, and if you have access to a team, I know, it's another thread for today. Use them. They can apply exclusions that we can't. They can help evaluate and sometimes make creative, and they can help with explainers and self-thought for clients. Alex goes, this is great. Slobodan goes, I think we are yet to solve how properly to have one first party audience and actually to track everything conversion tracking. Once our industry close those two topics, we can easily discuss what is next on this menu. Julia Weiss goes, the B2B question is a real problem, but it's a transferable in the travel space. We have lots too many of those micro conversions Google loves, to the point where our campaigns can easily become wasteful. Try to cull as much as possible, and if you have to use a micro like a page view or newsletter, try to narrow it down and make the campaign exclude other conversion types. They can at least give you an audience to run a search campaign against. Julie goes, yeah, oh, it would be so cute if Google actually woke up to the business potential of creating a real B2B advertising offering. Still waiting 20 years in. Wow. And Julie goes, continues, will 2024 be the year that Microsoft decides to it wants to blow up digital B2B advertising and combines LinkedIn and Microsoft Ads into a single platform? Not holding my breath, of course, but that would be awesome. And then our next question is talking about getting the support you need from Google Ads and other platforms. So what are our thoughts? What's on our mind this week about getting support? And Julia, yeah, starts us off saying support or lack thereof was also a topic that came up when we had Ginny from Google Ads with us before the holidays. And Julia Weiss goes, this is a rough one. Speaking as a giant holdco brat, I can say there are ways to get the most out of the team you have. Include them in your plans, have regular contact, connects with them, etc. When they get too salesy, let them know. I have gotten full-on apologies from teams for wasting time. They have targets to meet just like us, and the more they know about what you need, the more they can help. That includes workarounds, diplomacy with other teams, access to specialists, and more. This business is about relationships, and while not all of them are the same quality, we can control how much we put in. Alex Nicole says, almost all my Google reps have been so bad since I lost my dedicated support when I left my last job. Right now, I'm blessed by the Google gods and I have a good rep. I wish this was the norm and not the exception, especially since I'll probably get shuffled around again at the end of the quarter. Sam goes, easiest way, spend a ton of money and get a good Google rep. And like Alex goes, yeah, Google loves money? No. Julia Vice goes, believe it or not even when you spend a huge amount of money with them, they still pull shenanigans. Blah. Travis goes, I find level desk setting at the onset of a new call to be immensely helpful. Always respectfully submitted. Here are the questions I ask at the beginning. How many years have you been practicing Google Ads? Have you ever directly been responsible for ad spend on behalf of clients outside of AAR? So that's auto apply recommendations even. And I talked about that on LinkedIn yesterday. No, today even. That was a poll today. So outside of AAR, so auto apply recommendations and optimization score, let's assume both are off the table. What strategies can we discuss? Sarah Steeman goes, I'm enormously frustrated with no support. Alex goes, very true, but the level of support is notably different as someone who has experienced both sides. And that's in response to Julia Weiss saying she's a whole co-brat, and meaning that even no matter how big, sometimes even though you might have a big account and a high spending account, there's still some lacking in the support. Riva Minkoff goes, the level of support has been so bad. I miss agency level support. We have some clients who need support and don't have any, and clients who don't need support and have a lot. And then Julia as well said, there's a real issue with support for regular advertisers. I will not be surprised if the pilot program of $50 for an actual call with a support rep gets fully rolled out. As outrageous as it is for a company the size of Google with its resources to be allowed to provide the most minimal of support to pay customers is another discussion. I, for one, am tired of support consisting of someone pointing me to support documents or copying and pasting from those docs, especially especially when I start every interaction by saying, I already went that route. Julia Vice goes, funnily enough, I just got an email from Meta about my heist budget client that says exactly this. Here are article resources, best of luck. And then, yeah, so that's basically Google just saying, or Meta saying, here are articles, check that out. Julie goes, I know I joked when Xfinity provides infinitely better customer service than digital ad platforms that should leave those platforms embarrassed, but it clearly does not. And yeah, Julia Vice goes, it's going to have another knock-on effect. Big co's like mine, who can foot the bill, will get a natural advantage. I'm glad for me, but I like to win on merit, not just pockets. And that can lead to more consolidation in the short term. And Julie finally says, as I've said for a while, that digital platforms have matured to a point where they are like traditional media, TV in particular, meaning that they are no longer a so-called level playing field where micro businesses can truly compete with mega businesses. Those days are long behind us. There are ways small businesses can find success, but these systems is now geared towards big advertisers with big budgets. And then going to our second to last discussion topic of this episode, we've got Julie going, what are clients or stakeholders asking you about most right now? Julia Vice goes, yeah, first party data and the effects of Meta's nonsense regarding local news up here, media in Canada is a trip right now. Julie goes, I feel like efficiency is going to be a recurring theme in 2024. Travis goes, I'm very grateful that clients are beginning to talk about first order profitability. I have the good fortune of working with some clients who understand their business math, know what they can afford to pay up to acquire new customers, and relentlessly track against contribution margin. This is a competitive moat. Despite being accounting 101, there are too many distractions that have drawn attention away from the fundamentals. I'm glad the boomerang seems to be coming back around. Boomerang needs to come back around too. The fundamentals, definitely. Sophia goes, recently I was asked to share what keywords we are targeting and whether we should just pause all the ones that haven't converted. Less money, more efficiency. Dwayne Brown goes, clients are all over the map since they are all at different stages of growing the business. Some are asking what the next 3 to 4 months look like. What did we learn last year to help build testing ideas for 2024? What are we doing for X product launched? How can our two sites not compete? This year is such a crazy one. Aaron Cohen says, yeah, one of the debates we seem to have is whether to provide just keywords to our stakeholders or also provide search terms. I'm a strong proponent of search terms because with matching being what it is, the keywords are more aspirational or fiction, and search terms are more fact. I think these days we want to make sure stakeholders grasp how squishy the matching is and what we are doing or not doing about it. So I think you need data on both. And for our last discussion point, Julie goes, where do you all think we are in the pendulum swing between companies wanting to outsource PPC, so that's agencies and freelancers, to companies wanting to pay salaries, so go in-house instead? So what's the pendulum swing we're in? Are we in the agency side or in-house side? Julie goes, I have been through this cycle many, many times at this point. Generally, when they are concerned about the economy, businesses will shift into the why are we paying all this money to outside resources when we should just hire someone to do it in here. Part of that pendulum swing, Julie goes, but also they may say, why are we paying salary and benefits to X number of people when we could just pay for the work itself and go the agency or more likely freelancer route? Julia Vice goes, I think in general terms, that's right. My bigger client pitches are very interesting. My bigger client pitches are very interested in our media rates and the prospect of a discount in media versus salary plus ins plus benefits makes us attractive. Travis goes, yeah, I think in-house has the allure of being cost effective. However, it's rare to hire a true multi-tool internally. Not all brands can afford an agency. In the early days, it may even be an irresponsible cost. Creating skills in-house is usually best during a formative time. What agencies can offer is access to a diverse skill set at a fractionalized cost. Yes, a lot depends on which team members are assigned to accounts, their bandwidth, their prowess, etc. But the point remains, at a certain point, brands should outsource for efficiency reasons. Travis goes, I see freelancers as a bridge between early days wearing many hats and a more mature state. Agency hired. It's a way to test the waters, outsource select functions that take up disproportionately more time, and when revenue allows for it. Savvy freelancers will find the most sought after functions and upskill there. Some examples can include GA4 report build, page building natively within Shopify and other CMS options, asset resizing, SaaS connections, and data validation. Dwayne Brown goes, it's 2007 to 2009 all over again, with some brands wanting to bring these things in-house. Makes sense for a lot of brands, and they should do it. The rest should not, if they cannot hire in-house talent or don't really have the skills to do the job. And on that note, we come to the end of our first ever episode of this year. And I hope you found that useful, taking some great takeaways as to what we're thinking about or what you should be thinking about that you've not thought to think about yet, and allows you to be more prepared and maybe go back to your clients with some interesting questions as to what people can start to, you know, foreseeing or started preparing for this year. So yeah, if you want to have an audio version of this chat, we're going to be doing that on Discord on Thursday, so you can go to Neptune Moon on Twitter. I imagine she's still there, or check Julie Bocchini out on LinkedIn. She will also be happy to provide you the link to that Discord audio conversation. For any feedback about the podcast, or even maybe any corrections or anything that has been shared, do get in touch with me on LinkedIn. My DMs are open. Just follow me on Anu Adegbola. We do have a PPC chat roundup group on there as well. So we'd love to have you add some comments you have about this topic. It'd be great for all our long-standing members and brand new listeners to give the podcast a review as well. It really helps with the growth strategy of the podcast. So you can do that on Spotify by leaving a rating or leaving a review on Apple. Just any of those places will be great. Just go to linktree.com/PPC chat_roundup to do that. And yeah, for our first event of the year on February 1st, I finally properly clinched down on a location, a brilliant location in Leicester Square, in the middle of Soho, in the middle of Chinatown. So that very great place to get some food and drinks afterwards. So please join us there on February 1st for three amazing speakers, a brilliant locations to get really us talking about the issues that we're going to be having this year, talking about the things that we should be preparing for this year, and some nice networking as well for pizza and drinks, and just general socializing about things that are important for us to discuss this year. So I hope you find that useful. Just go to ppcliveuk.com for your tickets for that. So finally, remember, for your campaigns and businesses to glide smoothly, there's a lot of hard work needed beneath the surface. So keep your swans kicking. Bye, and speak to you next week.